Okay, so this week's parak is the fifth parak, and I have it here on page 253 in the version of the Siddur that we're using. If you have the Hebrew English, so then Igor will let you know, but it's page 253. Now, if you take a look, before we get into any specific Mishnah, I'm just going to read the first words of the Mishnayos in order, and you'll pick up on the theme. So Mishnah Aleph, Be'asar Ma'amaros, Mishnah Beis, Asara Doros, Mishnah Gimel, Asara Doros, Mishnah Dalet, Asara Nisyonos, Mishnah Hey, Asara Nisim, Mishnah Vav, Asara Nisyonos, Mishnah Zayin, Asara Nisim, Mishnah Ches, Asara Dvarim, Mishnah Tes, Shiva Dvarim, Mishnah Yud, Shiva Mine Puranios, Mishnah Yud Aleph, really continuation of Mishnah Yud, Mishnah Yud Beis, Berba, Prakim, Hadever, Misrabeh, Mishnah Yud Gimel, Arba Midos Ba'adam, Mishnah Yud Dalet, Arba Midos Bideos, Mishnah Tes Vav, Arba Midos Bisalmidim, Mishnah Tes Zayin, Arba Midos Benosnei Tzedaka, Mishnah Yud Zayin, Arba Midos Beholcha Beis HaMedrash, Mishnah Yud Ches, Arba Midos Beyoshrim Lefnei Chachamim. Anybody pick up on a theme?
Yeah,
Dmitri. Numbers, right? So that the theme of the first 18 Mishnayos, the fifth parak, is organizing things according to numerical principles, to say the world was created through 10 figures of speech, 10 acts of speech, so, as it were. Talk about the trajectory of generations from Adam to Noah and from Noah to Avram, to talk about various miracles that occurred, Asar Nisim Nasu Lavosenu, etc., etc. And so organizational principle based on numbers, and that's clearly the dominant theme of the first two-thirds of this parak. Because that's just a general observation. But again, it's not just a mnemonic device, but the utilization of numbers and mathematical tools in order to present ideas is something that comes from a very particular place. So I'll try to illustrate what I mean by that through a Mishnah in this very parak. So if you take a look at the very last Mishnah in the parak, Mishnah Chafav, this is quite a famous one, Ben Bag Bag Omer, Hafoch Ba V'Hafoch Ba D'Cholava, Uva Techeze, look into it, V'Siv Uvileva, okay, and to make this one's calling throughout one's life to the point of age, Umina, and from it, Lo Sazua, do not extract or separate yourself. She'en lecha mida tova himena. Ben hehe omer lufum tzara agra. So Mishnah Chavav, ben bag bag omer, hafoch ba v'hafoch ba d'chol ava, right, reflects an idea that the entirety of wisdom, of perspective on life, is to be found in the Torah. So then it shouldn't be surprised that, Chazal are perfectly willing to make use of mathematical tools, mathematical frames of reference in terms of presenting some core ideas. The idea is that, unlike the way that we very often look at life, that there's Torah and there's Chol, which is true at one level, but that's really a very superficial way of looking at the world. That everything that is truthful of knowledge or substance emanates from God. Mathematics, in as much as it's a true and internally coherent, sustaining way of looking at the world, and it certainly is, nobody challenges that, becomes a perfectly acceptable tool in terms of presenting core Torah ideas. Right? We don't see it as Torah versus Chol, black and white, in those kinds of extreme terms, the way that some people often present these things. But on the contrary, part of an organic, holistic Torah perspective on the world. Hafoch ba, hafoch ba. Immerse yourself in it. Go through it. Turn it over again and again and again. Dechol ava, because there's nothing in life that isn't addressed by the Torah itself. The idea of uva sechaze, that this should be your field of vision, visiv uvelivan, that you should, over the course of your life, grow older and older and older with Torah, and that as new situations develop, marriage, parenthood, the challenges of life that are very different in quality than the challenges of childhood, adolescence, when most of us receive our formal Jewish education, the need for ongoing immersion in Torah, siv uvelivan, the idea of continuing to involve yourself, uminelo sazua, and do not look elsewhere, but continue to fix yourself to Torah, she'en lechamida yafeh heimena, because there's no thing in life that's going to be able to provide you that degree of meaning, and that degree of clarity, and that degree of spiritual sustenance. This is something that may be difficult for younger people to appreciate, but I think that people who have made this a life practice all testify. I've never heard somebody who's made Torah study a very regular part of their life through their adult years who regretted it in any sense of the term. And on the contrary, find that it's the most sustaining element of their life and gives them great peace often in the stormy waters of adult living, which everybody can readily understand. So that's the first point to make, is a kind of a holistic perspective on the world, utilization of all different kinds of formulations before we get into the substance of some of those formulations that reflects the idea, hafochba vafochba decholaba, that Torah encompasses, doesn't compete with the world, but encompasses all of the wisdom that exists here. Let me just make one point about the beginning of the parak, and then we'll really turn most of our attention to the middle and the end of the parak. The first mission in the parak, Vasara Mamaros Nivra Ha'olam, the world is created through speech. 10 different forms of speech, Vayomer Elokim, Vayomer Elokim, Vayomer Elokim, says that really 9 times, and then Bereshis Bara Elokim, Es HaShemayim, that's also considered one of the Amar Maros. So Ma Talmud Lomar, so why is this important? Ve'alo v'ma'amar echad yachol ihi baros. The world could have been created, might have been created, with one figure of speech, one act of speech. Ela li para min harisham shema'amnes olam shenivra ba'asar ma'amaros. V'liten tzchar tov l'tzadikim shemekaymines olam shenivra ba'asar ma'amaros. What for? To hold the wicked to greater accountability, because they're destroying the world that was created in 10 distinct moments, act, quote-unquote, of speech, and to provide greater reward for the righteous who are sustaining the world that was created with, these distinct elements of speech. It's a very confusing Mishnah, right? The question is, again, granted that God can create through speech, which is a fascinating idea, speech is very often, in legal terms, contrasted with ma'aseh. Masa is physical action, Dibor is merely speech. Someone could draw distinctions between the two, but granted that for God, speech is creative in its own right. So that being said, the Mishnah wants to know, why couldn't God just simply do it all at once? And the Mishnah's answer essentially is because through dividing his speech into various components, that creates a more elaborate structure. And therefore, those who are involved in sustaining that structure that, so to speak, required more effort on God's part are entitled to more reward. And those who are involved in destroying that elaborate structure are liable in an even greater sense. It's a little puzzling. Again, you would imagine that...
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Igor. I mean, you have that in the second parak of Bereishis of Na'ase Adam.
Yes.
Together, Anvisanusha Shekadosh Baruch Hu Shenimlach Beveis Dino, that God consults his advisors, his heavenly retinue, as it were. But basically, God is speaking per se. And that's what I like to call an act of speech. Be'asara ma'amaros nivra olam. So, in the Mishnah requires some elaboration. What do we really mean that the crime of destroying the world is qualitatively greater because God spoke in different stages, and what do we mean that the reward for the righteous is qualitatively greater because they're involved in sustaining? Ultimately, it's the same world. So, okay, so Dimitri had a point.
Just have a question. My understanding is that there was one initial creation, Yeshua, and the rest of it was really congealing the soul, initially created raw material into their final forms. So, in a sense, there was really one act of creation, and the subsequent acts are really, maybe not using bara, but the hasa.
Well, but remember that the term bara is used throughout the creation narrative.
Right.
It's used in that
Be'asar ma'amaros nivra olam. So, for example, even on day five, va'yivra lokim es hataninim ha'gedolim, that God created, va'yivra lokim es hadam b'tzalmo. Again, we continue to use the term bara. I can understand why somebody would say that, is that that first moment of creation is fundamentally different because nothing existed prior to that.
Rabban says the kukulin, and then it expanded, and everything ever would be was encapsulated in that span.
Right, though, but again, the term bara continues to be used. So it is accurate to say, basara mamaros nivra ha'olam, is that the term bria continues to resonate even on the later days. But anyway, but go ahead, because I think that your point transcends that one narrower issue, but I think you wanted to make a broader point.
Well, I mean, not really, but maybe you have a broader point, but the broader point in general is that how does it reconcile with what we're reading now, where we're seeing that...
Okay, so then again, that's what I would say, is that the term Bria continues to be used. So I think that would be the resolution.
Yeah, it's
just, yeah, Steve was waiting.
No, I'm sorry. I'd say that it might actually reflect the fact, and this is, I think, the issue of Magare, is that whereas Tzaddikim recognized that these different voices all emanate from a single entity, the Rishoyim say, no, there are dissimilarly many different entities with no unifying force. If there was only one voice, you'd all have this ability to simply say, yes, of course, we recognize that. But it's Hashem's ability to essentially allow people to discriminate and make choices whether they see the underlying unity on the one hand or they see no unity and simply chaos.
Okay, so what Steve is saying is that when the Mishnah suggests Tzaddikim mekayimin es ha'olam shenivra be'asara ma'amaros, lekayim is not just to keep the world going, to sustain the world, but sort of to hold these things together. These asara distinct ma'amaros, for them, are all part of a holistic creation. Whereas the Rishayim shema'abdin es ha'olam, that destroy it, they're tearing these ma'amaros apart. Okay, that's a very interesting... And then Steve's approach would justify why it is that the Mishnah is emphasizing the fact that these were distinct. Now, these distinct ma'amaros can either be brought together or peeled apart. Okay, so that I think would be a very sensible explanation for the trajectory of the Mishnah. Yes, Moshe.
So this craziness to speak of, is it evolutionary, for example? And in a world, then what we are today, as a child born, three entities are involved, man born in Shem, are we to complete creation, or how should we learn from this role that mankind plays in this creation or production?
Okay, so I was actually going to get to that next, because it takes us in a slightly different direction. But well, let's reverse and handle that first. And what Moshe is pointing to is the most important motif of the first Mishnah. The idea that creation itself, even though, of course, we don't deny the fact that God's creative capacity totally transcends the capacity of the human being, but that creation, in the ongoing sense, is actually a matter of partnership between God and human beings. And that's very important. Did everybody see that from the Mishnah? Be'asara ma'amaros nivra ha'olam. God speaks, the world was created. And God continues to be involved in the world. However, and this is must be emphasized, tzaddikim shemekayimin es ha'olam, that the world continues to function on the basis of the actions of the righteous. That takes us back to the first parak, al shlosh advarim olam omed, tera vodik milos chasadim, al shlosh advarim olam kayim, din emes v'shalom. But the idea that we all have a very significant role to play in sustaining creation is undoubtedly the central motif here of the first Mishnah. And whereas God can do that with speech, tzaddikim have to do that not just with speech, but with action as well. Now, if that's true, then, you know, that's not free. That comes with the cost. And the cost of that is, of course, what it says in the Mishnah as well, that if tzaddikim can sustain the world, Rishaim, ISIS, Hitler, right, can, to a very significant and empirical degree, I don't mean this in some theoretical sense, destroy large parts of the world. In a literal sense, destroy many lives, destroy many places, and many communities, and many cities. So part of that bechira chafshis, that God gives us the right to choose our own destiny, ad kidei kach, that he's willing to be mitzamtzem himself and say, look, I could do this all on my own, but I've created a world where I'm asking for human partnership, and it's a legitimate request. And part of it, for it to be legitimate, means I'm not just going to backstop them every time they make the wrong choice. So this Mishnah poses implicitly a fundamental choice. Do you wish to be Mekayim? Or do you wish to be Ma'abed? The Mishnah makes no bones about it. And if you're Mekayim, you're Mekayim something, and this is how I would put it, similar to Steve, but maybe with a slightly different emphasis. You're Mekayim something that's very precious, that God looked at 10 different times and built one level, on another level, on another level. Be'asara ma'amaros, ve'lo b'ma'amare, echad yachali baros. That they recognize the value of each and every stage in creation, the celestial elements, the vegetation, the ilanos, animal life, sea life, the life of the birds, every different aspect of the cosmos. And they appreciate all of it and they wish to sustain it. And conversely, those who are filled with a sense of aggression, violence, man's nihilistic impulse, which is unfortunately such a part of our world today, such a dramatic part of our world today, so much more than in my formative years, '90s, where you didn't have this kind of violence broadcast into every living room in the world like you have now. So there's a stark choice about something that's very, very precious, something that's very elaborate, something that God himself took the time to fashion one level on top of another level. Do you want to be Mekayim, or do you want to be Ma'abed? Re'ei Anochi Nosein Lifneichem Hayom Bracha U'Klala. Choice is yours. We're going to read Parshas Bechukosai this week. Im Bechukosai Seilechu Ves Mitzvosai Tishmeru. Im bechukosai timasu. Choice. Yes.
So even another aspect of Asarabish as a real phenomenon, maybe that's the fact that the Asarab phenomenon back on the individuals, Siddiq himself, as in like Saddam, there will be Ken Siddiq, and that if you preserve this idea of the meaning of people that are recognizing Hashem, then the world will survive. If you tear it down, the world cannot survive.
So, let's instantiate that. That's exactly the point that I was going to make. So the second and third Mishnayos. Asara doros me adam via noach, lodia kama erach apayim lefanav, shekola doros hayu machisin uvayin, ad shehevi aleim es me'amabul. Asara doros me noach ad avram, lodia kama erach apayim lefanav, shekola doros hayu machisin uvayim, ad shebo avram avinu v'kibel schar kulam. It's exactly the point that the Mishnayos make. In terms of this stark choice, do you want to be a Mekayim or Ma'abed, the overwhelming majority of generations essentially chose the path of being Ma'abed, until the point of Noach, where God had no choice. But, and this is a very important insight into Parshas Noach, God did not destroy the world. It's a false charge, it's a misunderstanding of the simple text of Parshas Noach. God did not destroy the world. What does the Torah say? Vayar Elohim es haaretz v'hinei nishchasa. The world had been destroyed. Morally, ethically. Keitz kol basar balefanai ki malo haaretz chamas mipnehem v'hineni mashchisam es haaretz. God's destruction was but the physical removal of the carcass that soul had been destroyed. Vayar Elohim es Hadam ba'aretz, God saw, and he commented to himself, "Ayom Elohim alibo lo osif od. I can't continue to allow this. Yetzer machshavos libo rak ra kol hayom." Ki hishchis kol basar estar kol al haaretz. That was the reality. 10 generations of those who would be Ma'abed as Ha'olam, and the result was the Mabul b'Mei Noach. And then it all repeated itself all over again. Asara doros mi Noach ad Avram, the same exact words. Lamed shekol hadoros hayu machisin uvayim lefanav. Progressively worse and worse. God, so to speak, had tied his own hands. And God takes the oath in the context of the Keshes, we are near Asa, HaKeshes Be'anan, and I'm going to honor that. Ode Kol Yemei Haaretz Ever Katsir V'Kor V'Chom V'Kayetz V'Choref V'Yom V'Alayla Lo Yishbosu. And yet, fundamentally, it was the same. The world should have been destroyed again, Bimei Avram, Ad Sheba Avram Avinu V'Kibol Schar Kulam. Till Avram redeemed the 10 generations that had come before, really the 20 preceding generations, 20 generations in the world, May Adam Ad Avram, and Avram redeems them all. Avram literally, L'Kayim Es Ha'olam. He's there. He's a sustainer of life itself. The Rambam actually refers to Avram in this way as the Amud, the pillar. The pillar is something which is Mekayim, the Binyan. Mitri, go ahead.
Could be saying that had there not been Avram, or had he not done what he did, that we would have another catastrophic event?
Presumably not, because God had tied his hands. There's different rabbinic literature. Maybe one approach is to say that God only tied his hands as far as a world, as far as a marble, but could have destroyed the world in other ways. The sense of the Mishnayos is that God couldn't destroy the world anymore, even though he did it in, you know, Noach's time, because God said, you know, I just can't hold people to this standard. It's like a teacher. I mean, a class, and a teacher holds the students to a very, very high standard. They have to cover this and this much material, and they have to write essays of very high quality. And 4 months into the year, the teacher looks around. 4 weeks into the year, the teacher looks around and says, "This is Gornish Telfin. It's not going to happen." God literally lowered his standards for the world in many different ways. Let's not lose sight of that.
So are we saying that absent an Abraham, we would just continue that we had to kind of Abraham-like figure?
The world was waiting for Avram. The world was waiting, and God was waiting. Go ahead.
You like the concept of Olam Mitzvah of Tzadikim, or 36 Tzadikim? Does that kind of play into this? So I thought you were going to go there.
Similar kind of an idea. Again, we don't have that in the Mishnah, but yes, let's say, you know, that tradition very much, you know, has this idea of the, at its roots, Tzadikim Mekayimin Es HaOlam, that the world rests. But again, you don't even need to resort to that. We have it in Perkei Avos itself, that the world literally stands or rests on Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. Paul and I have discussed in the past the great yeshiva in Volozhin, what we used to refer to as the Eim HaYeshivos. Volozhin is very significant, 19th century Lithuanian Jewry. Volozhin, the Seder Hayom, involved a 24-hour coverage in terms of Torah study. They used to learn in shifts. Why? A literal understanding of this concept that the world rests on the study of Torah.
That's what Rapal did also.
Who did this?
Rapal.
I just didn't hear. Who is
Ramchal?
Okay, interesting. Yes.
I'm just curious. Because we have these 10 acts of creation, the combination of which create the world we know, it raises the question, at least in my mind, or I wonder: is there any kind of mapping of the spheros?
You know what?
The spheros.
I'm not even going to try. I'm not trained in the study of Kabbalah. I know what you're referring to. My knowledge of Lurianic mysticism is limited. Would be generous. It's not my area. I'm not able to further address that issue.
Say, so,
Nish Bayunzura, Moshe. Wasn't simple. Remember that Maimonides says that it took Avram 37 years to come to that conclusion. You know, if we ask our students today to think for 37 minutes about a problem, they'll look at you like you're asking them to, you know, remove a kidney without anesthesia and to donate it to a friend. You know, 37 years of very intensive thought. It wasn't easy for him. And as you know, midrashically, it wasn't as if the world then turned around and said, yes, you know, you're absolutely right. We're prepared to follow you wherever. there is a group, Vesanefesh Asher Asu Bicharad. There's a group that followed Avram. Probably didn't amount to very much. Kiva Yitzchak, Yikari Lechazar. In the end, who was Avram left with? He was left with one. He was left with Yitzchak. And it was a small group. Kiva Shivim Nefesh, Yerdu Avosecha Mitzrayimah. It was a small, small group. And it was a group that, in its existence, in its continued existence, its miraculous continued existence, continued to bear a kind of an implicit witness to the God of Israel. And that's the idea. Lo lema'anchem Yisrael, elo lishmi ha'gadol, says the Navi Yechezkel, that your continued existence, despite, you know, all of your failures and all of your shortcomings, is a glorification of my name. He says, the Gemara in Yoman Samachtes says, you know, in name of Anshe Knesses HaGedola, because if it wasn't for the awe of God, Heyach Uma Achas Yachol L'Kayim Bein Ha'umos. It's an important point. Okay, so to transition to the next idea in the Perek, and we'll do two more ideas, is what I would describe as a culture, a certain personal culture that facilitates learning. I don't need to justify in this context, we'll talk about this far more extensively next week, that Talmud Torah study per se has a pride of place in Jewish worldview. And this is expressed not really only amongst observant Jews for whom Talmud Torah itself, but the idea, even after enlightenment and reform, brought Jews very, very much out of the environment in which they had been living for centuries and millennia, the continued emphasis on knowledge and on learning and understanding is really a testament to the depth of this culture. So Yahadus embraces learning, again, not just as a certain gathering of facts, but I would call a personal culture. There's a certain worldview that goes along with learning. Now, I don't believe myself equipped to properly articulate what it is I'm trying to say, but I'd like to take just another 30 seconds before reading the Mishnah because I consider it that much of an important point. Again, to summarize, there's the learning itself, the amassing of knowledge, but there's a certain character, personal character, that houses learning. And Chazal spent a great deal of time developing that idea as what is the character development that is needed to facilitate, you know, let me put it this way in terms of a mashal. If you want to have a library, the point of the library is to hold knowledge in the form of books, and today in the form of digital knowledge, right? But for the library to work, so there needs to be walls, and there need to be bookshelves, and there needs to be a librarian, and it shouldn't be 1,000 degrees in there, there should be tables and chairs, there should be a functional facility. For the sake of housing that knowledge and creating an environment in which that knowledge can permeate. So the same thing is true of a human being. And Chazal spoke extensively about the formation of the infrastructure of character that would be needed to host the knowledge. That's extremely important. So let me show you two Mishnayos. Mishnah 1. The ninth Mishnah in the chapter. Shiva Dvarim Begolem Vishiva Bechacham. That there are seven qualities. A golem is literally a lifeless form of clump or dirt that hasn't been fully fashioned. A golem is very often the term Chazal used for a kli that hasn't been finished yet. In other words, before you've done the Makke Bepatish, you've given it that final hammer blow to form it into a functional kli. It's a golem. It's something that exists as a clod, but its functionality has not yet been developed. So a golem was obviously the term used in Jewish tradition for, you know, something of a lifeless, robotic. Yeah. Vishiva b'chacham, and the opposite in a chacham. Chacham, and again, we're not talking about the knowledge itself, but what I like to call the infrastructure that houses the knowledge. It's a point of emphasis for Chazal. Einu medaber lifnei misha gadol mimenu b'chacham over menyan. So, first and foremost, there's a sense of humility, that he does not interject himself, impose himself, in the company of a person who is more knowledgeable or simply older than he is. One. Two, that irrespective of who his interlocutor is, even if that person is junior to him or less erudite than he is, he conducts the conversation in a certain way. His interlocutor is given the opportunity to express himself, herself. Three, eino nivhal lahashiv, that he responds not in a kind of an impulsive rush, but with consideration. Remember the first mission of Avos, Hevu Misunim Badin, is the first teaching in Avos, that Chazal implore us, and particularly Torah scholars and judges, to be very deliberate in judgment, to consider all points of view, and as opposed to today, when for a person to be able to see both sides of an issue is essentially, people don't say it, but it's essentially perceived as a weakness or as a liability, a lack of resolve or principle that you can see multiple issues. It was a matter of deep conviction and principle and resolve for Chazal that somebody should be able to see both sides of an issue. In fact, I would say sine qua non to be able to be one of the Chachmei HaMesorah, to be able to perceive various competing legitimate points of view. Okay, there are certain cases in life that are chad mashma'i, they really are unilateral, but most things in life are not. Most things in life are very, very complicated. And if we all know the expression, there are two sides to a story, there are usually many more than two sides to a story, and both people can be saying something that's true, even if it seems like one is in tension with the other. So that's the first thing, you know, that we talk about in Pirkei Avos, having Masunim Badin, Eino Nivhal Lahashiv. He's not rushing to draw a conclusion and to respond. Four, Sho'el Ke'inyan, that he asks questions which are not sort of tangential, or he's looking for an opportunity really to make a comment, and he puts it in a question form. Sho'el Ke'inyan, he asks appropriately, Umeshev Ka'alacha, that when somebody asks him a question, his answer is not meandering and sort of a way for him to slip his agenda inyan, but he's answering the question that was asked. He has enough respect for the people that are asking the question to be able to respond directly and to the point. Omer al Rishon Rishon ve'al Acharon Acharon, that let's say if a series of questions were presented, that he proceeds systematically. Systematic approach is reflective of an organized mind. The organized mind, to go back to my library analogy, right, you want the Dewey Decimal System, right? The book should be in order. It shouldn't be that the books are, you know, wherever in the library, it has to walk around, you know, and spend 42 minutes every time she wants to find a book. But that there's order in this personality that houses the knowledge. Ve'al mashalo amar, omer lo shamati. And he has the honesty to say, I don't know, if he doesn't know. Umode al ha'emes, and generally speaking, that he's a truthful person. So to the extent that he's, you know what, I made a mistake, that was erroneous. So again, just to review these, you know, Shiva Dvarim Bechacham, Shiva Dvarim Begolam, right, and they're really meant to be opposites. So to go over, none of them have to do with knowledge per se, but again, the personal culture or the character that's developed as a way of housing that knowledge. So the first thing again is not to impose yourself. Number two, that allows people to formulate what it is they have to say. Number three, is that even in when it is his turn to speak, right, he's not rushing, he's presenting things in an organized way. Is Omer al Rishon Rishon v'al Acharon Acharon, that this is a person who is systematic in his approach. You know, this is said in Sefer Bereishis, and when Eliezer, or the Eved as he's called, he's not really called Eliezer in the Chumash, in that context, says, Vayomer bat mi'at, he says to this woman who would be Rivka, who are you? Hayesh lachem makom lalin, do you have a place to stay? And she says, Bas bisuel ben Nachor, she identifies herself. And then she says, Yesh makom, not just lalin, but lalun. And Rashi points out, Rishon, Rishon, ve'achron, achron, this is a girl with an organized mind. So she was a balas chesed, and she was organized, you know, in terms of her approach. And that itself was taken with a great degree of seriousness. Okay, Sho'el ke'inyan umeshiv ka'alacha, that the questions the person asks are relevant questions. The answers that are provided are direct and honest questions. Mashalo shama omer lo shamati, doesn't pretend to know what he's talking about if he doesn't. Umote al ha'emes. So again, a personal culture of knowledge that's of great significance. And I believe very, very much that this is representative of Chazal's points of emphasis about the capacity to develop the character which is appropriate for housing knowledge. Let me just give you another Mishnah from the Parak that substantiates this idea. This is the 18th Mishnah, bottom of 254. Arba midos v'yoshvim lifnei chachamim. There are four different qualities amongst students, people who are yoshev lifnei chachamim. Now, before I develop this point any further, just allow me to make one observation. It's interesting that you would expect that the Mishnah would have said arba midos b'talmidim. That is what it's talking about. But it says b'yoshvim lifnei chachamim. I think this is important. The term Talmud is a term of great dignity and honor, a person who's a student. But yoshvim lifnei chachamim, in one particular sense, may be even more descriptive. Yoshvim lifnei chachamim literally means those who sit in front of the wise ones. So yes, there's a certain amount of knowledge transfer that's implied. These are chachamim, presumably they are imparting knowledge. And those who are there to receive that knowledge. But the element of learning or development, perhaps that's the more appropriate term, development, even though about 15 years ago somebody decided that the term development meant raising money, but well, we'll go back to the original term of development, of growing. So I guess it means growing your bank account. But arba midos b'yoshim lifnei chachamim is development that's not merely through kind of empirical knowledge, but simply they're sitting there to observe the chachamim. They're apprenticed in terms of gaining wisdom.
Yeah.
And you know, Steve, what I have in mind when I talk about these things is let's say go back to, you know, the pre-industrial revolution economy. So somebody's going to become a wagon maker. You know, so he's 8 years old and his father, you know, basically apprentices him to, you know, Peter the wagon maker in town. And it's not just, okay, so Peter will teach him how to make wheels, right? And Peter will teach him how to make the wagon itself and how to attach the wheels to the wagon, how to make it of different sizes and, you know, at varying speeds if he's, you know, really good at what he does. And you want to use this kind of wood for the larger ones and this kind of wood for the smaller ones because different considerations, capacity to carry versus the need for speed. You know, this is a muddy terrain, this is a hilly terrain. You know, he's a great wagon maker. But there's so much more that's transferred than simply the lessons. Is that by sitting in the shop all day, you're picking up tens of things every day by osmosis, much more than is being articulated. So a yoshev lifnei chachamim, it's not merely the case that, okay, so the Chacham will give 2 hours of lessons a day, 5 hours, 8 hours of lessons a day. There's a certain osmosis to the term, a yoshev lifnei chacham. He's simply sitting there. And he's sitting there observing and assimilating knowledge and absorbing. Right? And that's what we really mean in terms of an apprenticeship. That it's so much more than that which is articulated. That for everything that's articulated, on the order of 5 to 10 things that aren't. How you set up the tools, how you leave the shop at night, how you get it ready in the morning, when to take a break, how to deal with the customer. Osmosis, osmosis, osmosis. This is the concept that Chazal described as Torah machzeres alachzan yeshala. Sometimes you have these kinds of families. You have the Beis Halevi, and Reb Chaim Brisk, and Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, and the Rav. There's a reason, right, that it continues to be refined. That he heard from his father, he heard from his grandfather, he heard from the great-grandfather. It's a very powerful concept, because it's like being apprenticed in that, you know, wheel-making shop. Okay, so that's the Yoshev Lefnei Chachamim, I think, as opposed to merely a Talmud. But we'll go deeper than that in a second. I think I saw a hand, I just wanted... Yeah, Dimitri.
I was going to say, I think part of what you're describing... transmitted, and a lot of kind of Jewish concepts of the Tino things transmission. very much something that you said to find in the ancient world leading up to about the industrialized revolution, and it's a very powerful and I think nowadays underutilized form of education.
So,
you see in the public schools where I work that it's very much underutilized.
Apprenticeship,
yeah, there are actually movements in some schools, yeah, to get back, you know, to look at trade school, like shop classes, stuff like that, as not just like for both lower functioning students, but as a real way to learn real life skills in a way that you can't learn just out of the book. And we all know that there are certain skills you can't learn from a book because nobody has ever learned to swim or ride a bike from reading a book.
So let me give you a very important example that affects all of us. It's perfectly in line with what you said about music, or what I was saying about sort of developing a Torah perspective through Chachamim, is medical education, okay? So as everybody here knows, medical education has undergone a dramatic revision in terms of the imposition of our restrictions on residence. Now, even the term residency itself implies something of what I'm talking about. The idea that the person is, and I don't know that this is what the founders had in mind, they may be taking a certain liberty here. Here's what it means to me: that a person is literally a resident of the hospital, ki'ilu they're living there, okay? And that the training that was absorbed when you'd be on a case for 36 hours straight, 48 hours straight, and yes, there's a side to that which is a risk, right? The medical errors go up. But what you could learn, right, if you weren't, you know, punching in and punching out at 8 hours, so what you could learn by being there for 12 hours, 16 hours, 36 hours, what you're learning is so much, much more, because you're watching people who have been doing this for decades, how they handle it, and you're not just checking out, but you're immersed in that. So when I were to talk to my father about changes in medical education, right, he would say that's always the trade-off, okay? So that you could reduce the number of medical errors, people aren't exhausted. At the same time, the quality of the education is far inferior, because what you're essentially doing is you're qualitatively reducing that immersive element, that apprenticeship, right? You're at Peter the wagon maker, so you're there from 7 in the morning to 10 p.m., right? And then you're going to sleep with him, and you're getting up with him at 5 to open the shop. So there's nothing that's happening that you're not observing, right? If you're punching out every 8 hours, so then there's a lot that's happening. Actually, 2/3 of what happens in every 24-hour cycle, you're not even there to observe. So that's of great importance, and that's not even getting into the issues of the handoffs, which is another downside. But be that as it may, that's exactly what we're talking about. So just to conclude, because I know that I'm running out of time, and I said, you know, I want to, you know, penalize you for my tardiness. So let me just point out one thing, because the idea that we're trying to develop and conclude with is the concept of a certain culture and infrastructure that a person has to build to be a house for knowledge. So previously we talked about those seven elements. So let me just read the 18th Mishnah. Arba midos b'yoshim lefnei chacham. Sfog mashpech mishameres v'nafa. What does it mean? Sfog sofeg es hakol. He absorbs everything. Mashpech machnes bazo motzi bazo. Right, the opposite. In one ear and out the other. He's not retaining anything. Mishameres motzias hayayin v'koletes es hashvarim. A sieve, right, which unfortunately, right, it passes through all the wine and it holds on to all the impurities, right? Okay, I'll come back to that in a second. V'nafa, the kind of the opposite, nafa, which is used for flour, to filter flour, shemotzias hakemach koletes es hasolas. What it holds on to is the stuff that you want to hold on to, and it gets rid of the coarser grains. So what Chazal are essentially saying is that don't think that just by sitting there passively, you're going to get what you need to get. First of all, you could forget everything. You could be a mashbich. But even more to the point, let's say you're not forgetting everything. The question is, are you in your mind actively assimilating the information, saying, okay, this is the topic that was addressed, right? And hopefully teachers make it easier. They review, they crystallize, they distill, they give you the bullet points. That's good education. But there is inevitably the responsibility of the student to say, this is what is said. This was really peripheral, tangential, secondary. It'd be nice if I can remember that. But this is the solace. This is the fine flower. This is what I have to take away. Actually, Chazal described Rabbi Akiva as this being his strength. Right? He comes in at 40. What allows him? Not everybody who just clocks in for 24 years can be Rabbi Akiva. So what was he was doing this, essentially. He was organizing. He was classifying and he was categorizing. So the idea of building this infrastructure in which to store knowledge goes along with what we said before. The seven qualities of the wise person, the eighth quality here being the responsibility, taking the responsibility to be an active learner. I mean, there is no teacher in the world that will not, if he or she is being honest, admit to this up front, that he or she is as successful as the student is willing to be a participant in the learning process. That's extremely important, and Chazal knew it very well. So to be a Yoshev Lifnei Chachamim is not simply to be there. With all due respect to the one who said that 85% of life is showing up, it's important to be there, but there's a lot that has to happen once you're there. So to summarize what we saw today, we noted that in this parak, which concludes with the idea of hafochba v'hafochba, to immerse yourself in it, and to continue to grow old with Torah, siv u'livan u'minelo sazua, ein l'chamida yafa heimena, that this is, you know, as the Yiddish aphorism goes, and it's such an important one, the Olam Haba is a good zach, and Torah is a besser zach, the Torah is the best thing, and that it sustains one, and continues to sustain one, and we see the whole world as related to Torah, as an intrinsic part of Torah. So using these mathematical constructs, Be'asara, 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 Be'shiva, Be'arba, should not surprise us at all. We talked about God creating the world through speech, and not just through one element of speech, but through this elaborate process, building one off the other, the preciousness to God, and therefore the importance of the choice that we all have. Do we want to be in Mekayem or Me'abed? Essentially, in Avram Avinu, or the 18 generations, excluding Noah, because, you know, there was both good and bad there, but the 18 generations that, you know, went from Adam to Avram, excluding Noah for just a second, you know, where people chose to essentially be Me'abed as opposed to Mekayim. Then what we went on to discuss was the concept of, just as a, you know, a library has certain physical requirements if it wants to be a good place for storing knowledge and for people to access knowledge, so there's a responsibility to develop character. Character, a certain personal culture, a personal integrity that allows one to be a storehouse for knowledge, and those are the Shiva Midos Bechacham, V'Hipuchan Begolam, and the opposite is true. And what it really has to do with is a certain personal culture, a personal standard of how one deals with information, how one values information. And then we saw this eighth, the responsibility to be a nafa, to be the proper kind of a filter, where you're really holding on to the things that matter more than anything else. Okay, so we'll hold it up there, and God willing, next week we'll have the chance to reflect a little bit on Parak Kinyan HaTorah. And again, my apologies that we...